Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
Sinead O'Connor, one of the most influential, controversial and truly talented singers of the last 20 years. Her exquisite and powerful voice has vocalised spirituality and spoken out in a way that's made her one of the most best known, I suppose, Irish women of her generation or of her era. Sinead is joining us today to talk about her career, but also to talk about her new album, Sean Nós Nua. I'm tempted in one sense to ask you why you are doing Irish songs. I'm also tempted to ask you why it's taken you so long to actually get around to doing an album like this.
Oh, well, I've been trying to do the album for a long time, for about 12 years. I wanted to make the record. And when I was signed to major labels, they just never, you know, got it. They never got the concept of the record, so they would never, you know, let me, in inverted commas, do it. And you sort of do sign over, you know, creative control when you get involved with major labels. And originally I was signed to a small independent label who then sold themselves on to various, you know, mates.
It's like a shark been eaten by a bigger shark, been eaten by a killer whale and
exactly.
All that kind of stuff.
So anyway, to cut a long story short, I couldn't talk anyone into letting me make the record, but it was driving me crazy for 12 years. The songs were driving me crazy. So
what happened in terms of giving yourself permission or getting quote-unquote permission from a record label to actually do the album?
Well, I guess what happened was circumstances led to my finding myself off major labels. Happily, and I found then that I had kind of creative freedom. You know, I guess when I started making records, my reasons for making them were that I would go bonkers if I didn't, and then I found when I was on major labels that I was making them because the record company would go bonkers if I didn't, do you know? And once I was free, I found that I could again begin to make records for the reasons I was when I was a teenager, you know, that I don't need the money, I don't need record advances or this, that and the other, you know, or hit records. So I just want to make records that will create a nice life for me where I can go around enjoying what I'm doing or enjoying singing again, you know.
And so, why traditional Irish songs, Irish folk songs, Irish ballads, why that particular genre?
Well, it's been, I guess I feel I've sort of been pregnant with this record for a very, 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 very long time, you know, that since I was a kid I've been massively, I mean, the most of the reason I would be a singer would be because of these kinds of songs, you know. Since I was a kid, these songs kind of would stop me in my tracks. They were very like ghosts to me. I'm kind of fascinated with the whole world of psychicness and life after death and ghosts and spirits and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I saw the song as always, was kind of ghosts. And they sort of do, they creep in and get you by the soul, and they don't actually leave you alone until you sing them, you know. Yeah. So some of the songs I knew since I was a kid, and others I learned when I had grown up, kind of thing. But they always had the same effect no matter what age I was, you know.
And were these the kind of songs, or were these some of the kind of songs that were played at home, for example?
Well, there's only four on the record that I would have known when I was a child, which would have been Molly Malone, obviously, I'll Tell Me Ma, and Ora Sidha Bahawalia, and Bodhi Nailami, which those two Irish language ones were kind of drilled into us at school without anyone actually telling us what they were really about or anything, you know, for fear that we might develop some.
Because that's something else, of course, you have tracks which you sing in the Irish language. What was your attitude to Irish at school, for example?
Until I was 12, I was really into Irish and I was almost fluent and it was great, but then it became really uncool, obviously, once you'd started to develop into a, you know, a young lady or whatever you might like to call it. One could argue that hasn't happened yet, obviously. But that finishing school was worth every penny. But anyway, no, I mean, obviously, once you got interested in anything, you know, sexy in inverted commas or rock and roll or whatever, then Irish became, sadly, very uncool, and it was usually very uncool people that were doing this kind of music or that were talking in Irish. It was all, forgive me, RTE heads. Do you know what I mean?
So is it good, from your point of view, to be able to record songs, a couple of songs, Os Gaeilge?
Yeah, very much so, but to funk them up and mix them up with modern and younger sound, and also with, like, I'm a huge Roots fan, so I've been aching for years to hear the traditional Irish sound mixed up with a dancehall or Roots Jamaican sound, you know. So to make him sexy, yeah, and make him triumphant and joyous, and do you know what I mean, and make him put a bit of a leather jacket on them, you know.
The reason why I asked why it's taken you so long is because anybody who's familiar with your version of She Moved Through the Fair, for example, or I don't know how many would be familiar with the version that you did of The Foggy Dew with the Chieftains and full orchestra, which is absolutely magnificent, will know that you have the capacity and the latitude to do this kind of material.
Right. Well, as I say, the main reason, like, I would have done it years ago, except for the main reason being that I was blocked by mainstream record industry who doesn't really give a shit about, you know, soul, you know. But another reason I think too is that I realise this is perhaps a controversial thing to say, but I think one has to have a certain emotional maturity to tackle these songs properly. You know what I mean? Or even as a singer, your voice comes into its own really in your mid-30s or whatever. And I hate to admit that I am almost 36. But you know what I mean? There's a certain emotional and physical maturity that you can bring to the songs in your mid-30s or 40s or whatever that you might not have in your younger 20s. Do you know what
so
I mean?
In a sense, you're fortunate because you're now more ready for them than you might have been 12 years ago.
I think I probably sing them better now than I would have 12 years ago. I study singing almost as a spiritual study. You know, the teacher that I have, the way he talks is he says he's a freer of voices, a freer of souls. He doesn't call himself a singing teacher. So his thing is that you're learning how to be yourself and to be honest and truthful, and obviously that doesn't involve just singing but how you live your life in general, you know. So I guess I feel if I had sung the records or the songs when I was kind of 20 or 22, I wouldn't have been as true to my own voice. I might have impersonated someone else singing them instead of just bringing my own personality to it, you know.
They are all songs that have stories attached to them. Some cases the stories are the story of the song, in some cases the stories about how the song actually came into the public domain, but they all have some interest attached to them. You're going to sing Lord Franklin for us. Just briefly before you sing it, just tell us a little bit about the ill-fated Northwest Passage search of Lord Franklin and what the song is about.
Well, this to me is a fascinating song. It's the only song that I didn't already know before we went to record the album, and I learned an awful lot about Donal Lunny, who's one of the producers on the album. It's also produced by Alan Branch and Adrian Sherwood and myself. But Donal's very, very quiet kind of guy, but it's all going on up there, you know. So I've known him on and off over the years, but never really got to know him, you know, intimately until we started to make this record, right? But he's such a smart guy that he can look through you and know what song will suit you and not, you know, suit you. So anyway, so he said to me, oh, you should do this song, Lord Franklin. And he played me a version of it that had some guy singing it. And I rejected it out of hand and said, no, that's a boy's song. It's just sounds like a song about soldiers or whatever, you know, or sailors. And it's not a woman's song, you know. So Donal said, no, wait till you see what happens when you sing it. But I didn't at that point know what it was about. So he once I said, no, I hate the song, he said, no, but this is what it's about. And it's about this guy, Lord Franklin, obviously, who was an explorer and went off looking for the Northwest Passage, which sounds very rude, but he didn't find it. And
Nobody ever found him,
exactly. And the wife spent all her life and all her fortune going out sailing looking for him, and actually went on the ships also looking for him. So the song is about her coming home unsuccessfully, but dreaming that she's found him, and then waking up and realising the dream wasn't true, and this represents her grief. So anyway, once he told me all this and made me actually sit and sing the song in his flat, we did like a week of rehearsals, just me and him, you know. And geez, even though he's been doing these songs for years and years, and he's been involved in almost every record that ever came out of Ireland, like really, you know, traditional Irish-wise, when we got to the last verse of the song, I was kind of singing away thinking, yeah, it sounds okay, the melody's nice and it feels nice or whatever. When we got to the last verse, and now my burden, it gives me pain for my Lord Franklin, I'd sail them in, just whoosh came up this grief, this massive, you know, tears. I just burst into tears, and I don't know where it came from. And suddenly Donal burst into tears. We had to stop for like 20 minutes, and the two of us are roaring red from crying like over it, a song, you know, which is kind of incredible. So I guess it goes to show you all Donald's pretty smart in terms of knowing he knows you better than you know yourself as a singer, do you know what I mean? Which is amazing. So.
Let's hear it. You've got Graham Anderson with you on guitar. We'll be hearing Graham on piano a little bit later as well. But this From Shan Nos Nua song live in studio. Thank you for that. Is Sinead O'Connor and Lord Franklin.
Won't be any crying this time. Thank you.
dreamed a dream and I thought it true concerning Franklin and his gallant crew. With 100 seamen he sailed away to the frozen ocean in the month of May to seek a passage around the pole where all poor sailors sometimes go. Through cruel hardships they vainly strove, the ships on mountains of ice once drove. Only the Eskimo in his skin canoe was the only one that ever came through. In Baffin Bay where the whale fish blow, the fate of Franklin no man may know, the fate of Franklin no tongue can tell, and Lord Franklin among his seamen do for my Lord Franklin, I'd sail the main. 10,000 pounds I would freely give to know Lord Franklin and where he
absolutely beautiful. Thank you very much indeed for that. We're talking to Sinead O'Connor in studio about her new album, Shan No Snua. This is not from Shan No Snua. I think it explains itself.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep all day since you took your love away. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. can see whomever I choose. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant, but nothing, I said nothing can take away these blues, 'cause nothing compares, nothing compares to you. It's been so lonely without you here, like a bird without a song. Nothing can stop these lonely tears from falling. Tell me, baby, where did I go wrong?
Very much indeed for that. That was Graham Henderson on piano. That, of course, is one of the great Irish songs, which is not an Irish song. Do you, when you're doing other people's material, because you obviously most of the material you do is your own, do you like to get a song that you can inhabit?
Yeah.
As with the, you know, as with the Shando songs on,
yeah,
on the
absolutely. Yeah, there's no point doing a song that you don't, you know, feel, that doesn't take you over. It's more the song should inhabit you. Do you know what I mean? I guess that's what I like about Well, I guess that's what I like about the Irish songs in particular, that they are like these kind of ghosts that take you over and use your body and use your mouth and use your voice. Do you know what I mean? But if you, I guess to do them, you know, right, you have to somehow move your own personality aside and allow those people to come through you. So yeah, it's about letting the song or the spirit or the person who's written the song inhabit you.
And even though that song was written by a guy from Minneapolis, has it in some way become an Irish song because of you?
Yeah, I guess. I never really thought about it before. Yeah, I guess.
Is it at this stage, is it becoming a bit of a monkey on your back, or do you still love it?
No, I love the song, really. You know what I mean? I guess sometimes it doesn't necessarily fit into the context of other songs that we're doing, like the Irish songs, for example. Do you know what I mean? But I do really like the song, and occasionally I might kick against doing it, but once I do, I'm kind of quite glad we've done it. But to be honest, it's among a bunch of songs that I've toured around the world for sort of 15 years singing, and you do get a bit bored. It's a bit like an actor playing a part. Like, you can, there's only so much you can go back to draw on in your own life to get the emotional thing out to do the song properly. Do you know what I mean?
So, it's like doing the Mousetrap.
Well, it's a bit like playing the same part for 15 years. It gets a bit, you know, I can't find anything now in my own life to draw upon to.
Let me bring you right back to the song that kind of that launched you in this country and internationally, and that was Mandinka. Tell me about how that song actually happened, how it came about.
I don't know if I should, really.
I'll go on.
Actually, my first ever single was Troy, off the same album. And how can I tell you how it came about? I don't know if often you should tell people how your songs come about, because it kind of takes away, you know, really, for the listener, what their interpretation of it is. Do you know what I mean? I think it's kind of quite important sometimes to let people imagine what songs are about, especially if you telling what they're about might get you into trouble.
Go on, tell us.
Let's just say I was having a little affair with someone I ought not have been having an affair with. But as it happened, this person was also someone who I told you earlier that I was into psychic studies and things like that, which I've been into, you know, since I was very young. But I used to have a teacher who I trained with for a while as a medium, and also sexually. And that's basically what it was about. It was about that affair and everything I was learning from it. And it's kind of very boring, really.
And why Mandinka? Because Mandinka is something that we, you know, associate with Africa, with African rhythms and all of that. Mm.
I guess two things. I mean, it's about, in terms of the, if anyone who knows anything about psychic studies, we're getting into hippy-dippy territory now, but anyone who knows anything about psychic studies will tell you that most people who practice as mediums have what you call spirit guides. You can have anything from 1 to 10, you know, to 100 spirit guides who are the ones that bridge between you and the spirit world and the person you're doing a reading on. So for me, lots of people have, you know, Red Indians and all kinds of things. For me, I have 3 particular guides, and 2 of them are African. And so I would take, I would be very influenced by those. By my, in psychic studies, you learn through guided meditations, you know. And you get in a relationship with these energies, really, which just show themselves as a picture of what they best represent to you. So I've got 2 African spirit guides, one of whom is a little short guy who says nothing, and the other one is a big, tall one who does all the talking. So,
now, in relation to the Shan Nos Nua, Shan Nos, as such, means... Well, I know what it means. It means, you know, old style, old fashioned. But to me, Shan Nos is somebody sitting in the corner of a pub singing completely unaccompanied. Mm. Now, I can imagine what a record company would have said if you'd come to them and said, I want to do a list of, you know, 12 or 13 songs, and I want to sing them completely unaccompanied. It would have been a huge, huge risk. On the album, you don't do that. You've got different kind of arrangements. One of the reasons why we're playing some of the songs off CD and you're singing some of them live is because you've got this these different arrangements. Would you have completely rejected the idea of just going the whole hog and singing these songs completely a cappella, completely unaccompanied, because of the reception that modern audiences, because of the modern ear, is just not used to that anymore?
Well, the whole point was, I knew for the whole time, I knew that I wanted the record to be called Shan Nos Nua. And for me, Nua is where it's at.
Right, okay.
You know, that you're trying to, in a way, there can be a lot of prejudice towards Shan Nos music or towards traditional Irish music in general from younger people, and even people like me, who's halfway between old and young, you know, because sometimes it's kind of been the property, if you like, of trad heads, as you call them, you know, who don't want the form to change and don't want anyone to mess with it and consequently shoot themselves in the foot. It's a bit like religion, you know what I mean? Because they won't flow with the times, it's bad for business, you know what I mean? But for me, the important part of the whole thing was the newer part, to try to bring these songs to an audience who so far might have rejected them because of the way that they're delivered in a very unsexy or unemotional way.
It's interesting because, I mean, you're on the record as saying that you have no problem at all with using your international fame as a platform for the kind of causes that you're interested in. So in a sense, I suppose you're doing the same thing that you have done politically in the past, you're now doing it musically, or are you? That you're using Sinead O'Connor as a platform to reintroduce people to this, to young people, for example, to this kind of music.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the first main reason I'm doing it is because the songs drive me crazy. If I don't get up and sing these songs, I'm going to go madder than I already am, and nobody wants that, right?
Absolutely not.
You know, so that's the main reason I'm doing it, so that I can get a buzz and a kick out of going around the world singing them, and it's good for me and good for my soul. If I hoped anything by putting it out and exposing it to other people, I guess something which fascinates me is that there is a caliber of Irish songwriting that has come from the past that our ancestors have shown us and that is still there, which when you compare it to a lot of the kind of songwriting which is coming out nowadays, your Boys Own and your Westlifes and the rest, you know what I mean? You really see that we're not really keeping up to standard and nothing seems to go any deeper than, you know, what can I do to make you love me? Do you know what I mean? And there has to really be something more than that. And to me, I think there's a place for all of that ooh baby, you know, stuff. But what I admire in Irish music and is the same as, and I always say this, the same as say what I admire from Bob Dylan and people like that, is that they taught and these songs teach that music songs can be vehicles through which very difficult emotions can be expressed. You know, the type of emotions that are hard to express in ordinary regular life. You know. And there has to be more to life than, like I say, what can I do to make you love me? Nothing seems to go deeper than the skin, really, anymore with songs. So I guess I was hoping, I'm just saying it in a very long-winded way, but I was kind of hoping that younger songwriters might actually be the ones to be inspired by these songs, you know, and that Louis Walsh might flagellate himself, as he should, and apologise profusely to all of us for lowering the calibre.
One of my favourite tracks on the album is one of my favourite songs of all time is a song, I know it as Paddy's Lamentation on the album, call it Paddy's Lament, you know, same difference. But tell us something about the background to the song, because it's in many cases it's an untold story. Very, very few people are aware of how many Irishmen fought in the American Civil War.
Right, well again, this is another reason for making the record. Young audiences can often reject this kind of music too, A, because of the way it's delivered, B, because the people who are delivering it are wearing Aran jumpers, and C, because they don't see what relevance it has for their life today or for the world today. Paddy's Lament, I think, is a beautiful example of how these songs, although they're ancient, or how these spirits, although they lived long ago, are talking to us through songs about our lives today. And that song, Paddy's Lament, is actually the whole thing that sparked me wanting to make the album. I'm always very, very struck or influenced by the first context in which I hear a song, that to me, that's what the whole bleeding thing means then, you know. So I happened to be, I left Ireland when I was 17, became what's known as a paddy, basically someone who, you know, gets really into Ireland and sentimental about Ireland because they're not there, you know. And so the further I moved away from Ireland, the more paddy I got. So I was living in Los Angeles, so it was pretty extreme. And someone happened to send me I think it was Day Dannon, and I always get confused as to whether it's the Bothy Band or Day Dannon, but I know that Mary Black was a singer. I think it was Day Dannon, and there was a record called Anthem. And I never heard it until, as I say, I was about 22 or 23. And I happened to be given this tape to listen to while I was driving around on the day that the Gulf War started. And I stuck this record on, and suddenly Mary Black's voice came out singing the song. And I, Jesus, it never struck me before that I knew these songs were incredible and that they were ghosts and sucked you in, but I didn't realise what they were saying or how relevant they were to what was happening in the world nowadays, you know, how you could fuck them up, if you like, and put them in a modern context, you know.
And so, it's if it was an Australian song, it would have been written by Eric Bogle, but it's an Irish song, and it's about the Irish Brigade, basically.
Yeah, basically it's about
Civil War.
A guy who, it's a warning song, if you like. It's an anti-war song, and it's very compassionate. That's what I like about it. As an anti-war song, it doesn't make any judgments of anyone. The guy is just concerned for your safety, really. So it's this guy who goes, is driven, and in a way this speaks to me about Celtic Tiger and all this shite. You know, here we are leaving our culture behind for money in a lot of ways, and what we find actually is we're getting embroiled in situations that are bigger than us, you know. So anyway, this guy goes to America, driven there by poverty and hunger, thinking he's going to get really rich. Instead, he gets conscripted into the army during the Civil War, into the Irish Brigade under old General Marr, and gets half his leg blown off. And so he's warning all the other young men or old men or whoever,
don't,
not to leave Ireland, basically.
Let's hear it again with Graham Anderson on guitar. This is Sinead singing Paddy's Lament.
Well, it's by the hush, me boys, and that's to mind your noise and listen to poor Patty's sad narration. I was by hunger stressed and in poverty distressed, so I took a thought I'd leave the Irish nation. Well, I sold me horse and cow, my little pig and sow, my father's farm of land. I then departed, and me sweetheart bid me gee. I'm afraid I'll never see, for I left her there that morning, broken hearted. Hear ye, boys, now take my advice. To America I'll have yous not be coming. There is nothing here but war, where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Dublin. Well, meself and 100 more to America sailed o'er, our fortunes to be making, we were thinking. When we got to Yankee land, they put guns into our hands, saying, Paddy, you must go and fight for Lincoln. Hear ye, boys, now take my advice. To America I'll have yous not be coming. There is nothing here but war, where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Dublin. General Marr to us he said, if you get shot or lose your head, every mother's son of yous will get a pension. Well, in the war I lost me leg, and all I've now's a wooden peg. By my soul, it is the truth, to you I mention. Where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Dublin. Well, I think myself in luck if I get fed on Injun buck, and old Ireland is a country I delight in. To the devil I would say, God curse America, for in truth I've had enough of their hard fighting. Hear ye, boys, now take my advice. To America I'll have yous not be nothing here but war, where the murdering cannons roar, and I wish I was at home in dear old Dublin. I wish I was at home.
I always loved that song. I love it even more now. Fabulous. Paddy's Lament. I was disappointed, actually, when I looked at the sleeve, the cover of the album, and there was no Foggy Dew there. But one of the beauties of Irish traditional music is that melodies turn up in all kinds of guises, because it is actually on the album. Well, explain.
Well, again, that's a beautiful tradition that I love from Jamaican music. Jamaican dancehall and roots and reggae music will do exactly the same thing, take rhythms and tracks, only not the vocal melody, but they'll take the backing track, you know, and like you could have a whole album made with the same backing track but 10 different songs, which is kind of fascinating. So it's amazing that the different cultures do the same thing. But yeah, thank God there are many uses for one melody in this country. So
yeah, because the Moorlock Shore is on the album, yeah. And it is the melody of the Foggy Dew.
Yeah, and the Moorlock Shore is, I'd say, along with Raglan Road and Concrete Jungle, the Bob Marley song, those would be my three favourite old-time songs. But it's just a beautiful.
You obviously, you know, you owe a certain amount to Donal Lunny because of this, this album. How much to Luke Kelly? You mentioned Raglan Road there. I know you haven't got Raglan Road on the album.
It's hard to say because
Is he somebody who, given that you came to some of this material quite late on in life, some of it quite early on in life, how aware would you have been of somebody like Luke Kelly?
Well, Luke Kelly, I think, was a very important and fascinating person for the reason that he wasn't the Aaron Jumper wearing type of perfectionist
wasn't.
Kind of, you know, what was good about him. And I think what's important, you know, I often say to my children that that people often are angels. There are people in the world who are not quite human, they're angelic, but then you would think they weren't because they're not perfect. But actually I think it's very important that angels don't be perfect, because you wouldn't be able to identify with them if they were. So that's how I see Luke Kelly, as someone who's quite angelic. And what was so great about him was that he wasn't perfect, but what he did go for with the songs was the emotion, that he was always there and present 100% emotionally with songs, but he wasn't like an opera singer, thank God, you know. So often when you deliver, say, I can't bear John McCormick singing traditional Irish songs, do you know what I mean? I mean, he just takes the sex completely out of it, where Luke Kelly was sexy and rough and dirty looking and imperfect, you know what I mean? I think that's quite important, you know.
You mentioned the kids. So, what did the kids make of Mammy singing these songs,
does it
matter a damn to them?
Yeah, no, Roisin actually loves the stuff. She happened to hear some of it in the car, and she goes to Irish speaking school, so she loved Ó Rá Sé de Bhaile Bhaile, and she goes, Mammy clever, and she makes me dance around the kitchen singing. You know, Ó Rá Sé de Bhaile Bhaile, and she's in the back of a friend of mine's car, she's kissing the speakers, you know what I mean? So I think it's a hit with her, definitely.
Okay, Roisin loves it. It's got to be good. Yeah. You weren't tempted to put She Moved Through the Fair on it? I mean,
well, no, I guess...
Been there, done that.
Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, I love Raglan Road and She Moved Through the Fair and the Foggy Dew, but I suppose they're of their time, and I've done them, do you know what I mean? And one of my favourite times of all was this little subversive performance of the Foggy Dew at the Irma Awards, where it was all full of English record execs, you know. So we were having a great...
Twas better to die neath an Irish sky than at Suvla or Set El Bar.
Exactly, and see, none of them really knew what it was about, so it was great, it was gloriously subversive. So you can't really beat that, you know.
Listen,
it's a bit like a wank.
Thank you very much for talking to us, and for talking to us about Chan Ó Snua is the name of the album. I would heartily recommend it, even if there was only one track in it and it was Paddy's Lament. I would heartily recommend it, and it is currently on release. And thank you very much, Anit, for talking to us. Thanks
Grand,
very much indeed for singing for us. Today's programme was produced by Kevin Reynolds with Paddy McBrain on sound.
Drama on One
Sundays at 8 p.m. rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.